This is Frank Prattle. My name is Zephyr Throld. You're listening at KPOO here in San Francisco at 89.5 FM. You might also be listening at WPS1 Art Radio, PS1 Contemporary Art Center, a MoMA affiliate. You might also be listening to our gracious host's website, San Francisco Arts Commission Gallery at www.sfacgallery.org, and of course at frankprattle.com. Today is an extra special day. It's going to be a rip raging roarer here. we have three guests, and I'll tell you a little bit about who they are. Kate Eilertson is the interim visual arts director at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts here in San Francisco. Hi.
Hi.
And we have Courtney Fink, the director of Southern Exposure here in San Francisco as well. Hi.
Hi.
And as a triple feature, Joyce Grimm, the co-director and co-curator of Triple Bass Gallery here in San Francisco, will be mediating today, and I'll be taking a back seat and eating a sandwich, so good luck.
Thank you, Zephyr, and thank you, ladies, for both being here this afternoon.
It's a pleasure.
Maybe we could start off with both of you guys talking about your role and just a brief overview of each of the institutions that you guys are directors of currently. And we can start with you, Courtney, if that's okay.
Sure. I am the executive director of Southern Exposure, and I just had my 5-year anniversary of doing that job there.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Amazing.
Southern Exposure is a 33-year-old visual arts nonprofit organization that supports artists and youth, and through exhibitions, education programs, and resources for artists such as grants, workshops. And my role there is a little bit of everything. It's interesting to think about, a director of, like something like Kate does, which is of a program versus of an institution, mm-hmm. Which is a smaller institution. But my role there is really to kind of work with about 50 people on a daily basis and take this group of people along to try to create a larger vision for what I think Southern Exposure should be accomplishing on every level, not just creatively, but really how to stabilize a nonprofit visual arts organization that, despite the fact that it's well-loved and well-known and quite old for an organization, still really a fragile type of thing and requires so much nurturing and attention to really keep it very healthy and strong. And that's really what I think my main job is on a lot of different levels. It's keeping a good group of people involved. It's making sure it's financially stable and has good funding. It's making sure the programs are relevant. And basically trying to, I think one thing that's kind of been my hallmark there, obviously, we've moved quite a few times, and just trying to really embrace a culture of change, trying to really address what I think and we think San Francisco should have present in the city, and what a nonprofit arts organization can really do to fill that. So that's the kind of stuff I think about every day.
Okay, thank you. How about you, Kate?
Well, I last October accepted the position of interim director of visual arts for the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, which is a large art center in downtown San Francisco, and that has both visual, performing, and film arts programs all the time. I'm going to contextualize it a little bit, though, because I've been in Courtney's shoes as well. I have also been the executive director of a couple of organizations in the Bay Area, Museum of Craft and Folk Art and Intersection for the Arts, and I've also worked at one of the great art schools, the San Francisco Art Institute, where I was associate dean and director of community engagement, community programs. So I've seen both sides of the large organization, who generally doesn't have to worry about making payroll every month, as I did at some of the other ones, but who has the sort of resources to do things in the way they should be done. For those of you that don't know, Yerba Buena is a very sort of thinks of itself as providing very contemporary, cutting-edge programming.
I just wanted to say that I feel very fortunate to be sitting with both of you ladies this afternoon, because I too run my own space with my co-director, Dina Pugh, and it's called Triple Bass Gallery. And we are kind of somewhere in between the two organizations, both Southern Exposure and Yerba Buena, and then somewhere else as well. And I think a couple points that I'd like to talk about today are actually being directors of arts organizations. And one of the key components of being a director is having your own set of ethics, goals in place, I think, to run an organization. And I think a good starting point would be for each of you maybe to talk about how you first became interested in the arts. And I mean from the maybe very the beginning, if we could go back that far. And we can go to you, Courtney.
Sure. I think I'm pretty lucky that I had a family that was very interested in the arts and really encouraged art looking from the time I was really young. So for fun, we would go to galleries and museums and really participate in culture. And then, of course, making art was a big part of my life. From the time I was a kid all the way through college and even up till now. So I studied fine art. I have a fine arts background. You know, it's funny because sometimes it's so much a part of your life, you don't realize it's what you really want to do. You think, well, what am I supposed to be doing here? I know I like that, but is that really what I want to do? And all along, I found myself doing it without realizing maybe that it was exactly what I wanted to do. And the day I graduated college, within a few months, I was already an intern at a nonprofit arts organization in New York City called Franklin Furnace. And that was my real introduction into the art world. And Martha Wilson, who's the founder, some of you might know her, she's really a mentor of mine still. I keep in touch with her. And just my experience there when I was 21, getting to be a part of that, I pretty much made up my mind right there that I wanted to stay involved in the art community somehow, but working really directly with artists.
Maybe you could address this briefly, but working in arts administration is so different than actually making, and you were talking about your background being very much of the maker. So when did you decide that the arts administration part was fulfilling enough for you to keep going in that direction, or you kind of do both, or maybe you could just...
I actually never really tried to professionally be an artist. I have a double degree in art history and fine art, and I guess for me, making art was, I guess, more of a personal, private practice, and not something that I ever really, I knew from the beginning I didn't want to pursue it. It's something that I do, and it's part of my life, but I really consider my job to be what I do. I think I'm pretty lucky that way, too, that my work is, my job is my work, mm-hmm. and that's kind of what I'm trying to achieve. Yeah.
How about you, Kate?
Similar to Courtney, I'm an artist, have always been an artist, have loved being an artist, but it's a very private practice. I don't do it to show in exhibitions, but I do it religiously. And I think the reason I got into it is that my father is a minister. And so I grew up in a home where we were always looking for why we exist, what are the answers to life. You know, he always encouraged us to challenge everything that we came across. So for me, it's been kind of all my life, a spiritual sort of quest to be involved in the arts. I, you know, moved to New York after I graduated from college in Minnesota and got a graduate degree in art and started to show in galleries in New York. And I got really disgusted with the art scene. I mean, I'm sure you've all heard this before, but I just thought, I don't want to make art to have to sell because I don't want it to be so influenced by all the people that I'm meeting at cocktail parties. I want to do it just for myself. So a way that I could do it, and I used to always say this, it's kind of a negative thing, but I think in some ways the role in arts administration I've called prostitution. It's a habit I have, this art stuff, and it's a way I can pay the rent and get health insurance.
Wow.
You gotta make a living.
Yeah. There are many discouraging, in terms of when you're talking about a nonprofit maybe putting out more inventive type of work, is that safe to say that that's what you're talking about in terms of the prostitution that would come from a commercial space?
No, I mean, anybody that's doing what Courtney's doing or has had the professional experience I've had is doing it because they believe in it and they love it and they see it as a way to make the world a better place. So, no, I think I'll take back what I said about prostitution. Maybe I said that when I was younger.
Well, you guys, I think both of you guys have probably been involved in some really amazing projects that make your all the work that you do very fulfilling. So is there, can you talk about, cite a couple of examples of artist projects or moments where you felt like all this hard work was really worth it for both of you?
I can talk about one I'm involved in right now that is really one of the most interesting kind of journeys I've ever been on with art, which is to co-curate Bay Area Now. So, I mean, it is so amazing to see the variety and the depth and the commitment of the artists in this community. I am just brought to tears when I leave these studios and hear about these people's commitment to doing what they're doing.
Can you give a little background on Bay Area Now so people maybe who are listening should know?
This is the fifth Bay Area Now at Yerba Buena Center, which has been around for 15 years. So every 3 years, the curators select what they see to be the most interesting artists working out in the Bay Area. This year, we've changed it a little bit because who are we to figure out who the most interesting artists are? That is just, sorry, but that's an impossible task. So it used to be thought of as something like the Whitney Biennial, where it presented between 20 and 30 artists and it in a 3-month exhibition. This year we've expanded it a bit and are working with some guest curators, including Joyce, who's sitting right next to me. And we're working interdisciplinarily. We're working with the performing arts curators and the film curators. And we are the three programs putting together a 2 or 3 month sort of series of exhibitions, all based on 4 themes. And the 4 themes, am I talking too much about this?
No,
it's good. The 4 themes are very general, but they are all looking at how the cultural life of the Bay Area is evolving and changing, and particularly in the last 3 years, how it's evolved in terms of people, the immigrants that live with us now, in terms of place, economically, how tough it is to live here, geography, geology, all those things that are changing. Ideas, you know, San Francisco has always prided itself on being this socially active, hip place. Is it really anymore, given what it takes to live here? And ideals. And this is the theme that, as we've gone around to the studios, this theme has gotten the most response for the artists, which is, what are the myths and what are the realities to living here in the Bay Area and working here, and how does that affect your work as an artist and the cultural life of the city?
And Courtney, you also, do you want to answer that question as well then?
Can you repeat it?
I'm kind of having trouble remembering what the question was, actually.
I think it was, now I remember, sort of, what am I working on right now that's really gratifying?
Yes.
Or a significant experience.
Right.
Please. Inspirational.
Like Kate, I have epiphanies on a regular basis, especially when I'm feeling very discouraged, which happens often. But I'll just point out the thing that's freshest in my mind, which just happened less than 24 hours ago. Southern Exposure organizes an event annually called the Monster Drawing Rally, and it's a well-loved event where hundreds of artists draw live. A lot of you in the room here were helping. Thank you. and I don't know, something about, you know, the event it's completely wild. It has a real sort of wildness to it, which is great. But there's so many people there, and there's so many artists who are literally jumping out of their seats to help us. And artists are calling us at this point to do this event. And it just brings in a lot of, I think, non-art world people, because it's kind of brings maybe art collecting and art making down to a very accessible, immediate type of place. And just really getting to say hello to all 100, and I think it was 130 people who drew last night, and just their genuine, like, goodwill to help us, and the kind of, it takes 200 volunteers to pull this event off, literally, and for that many willing people to be just happy to help and all do a great job and are nice about it, it completely blows me away that, you know, Southern Exposure is small, we only have 4 employees. So for a small organization to really wrangle that many people on a regular basis into helping is completely amazing to me.
It's a miracle.
So it's interesting that your specific moment in time that's inspirational is about community and bringing people together as opposed to just one specific artwork. Do you have moments where there's a sense of community within Yerba Buena that you can maybe speak to as well?
Oh, absolutely. I think every exhibition that on opening night, the sort of pressure to get to opening night makes everybody crabby and sensitive and tired and exhausted. But then on opening night, when you see openings at Yerba Buena are just amazing. There are usually 1,000 people there, and people lined out the door to come into this thing. And that's when I have an epiphany moment, because it does all seem worth it, all of the hard work. We were talking about this earlier before the program started, about all of the sort of administrative stuff that goes into our work that most people don't think of when they come to see the exhibition, thank God.
What do you guys think artists in San Francisco are most in need of? Because we've got tons of spaces in which to show artists' work. But what do you think, besides just a space for the work to reside, what are some services or what are some things that you feel artists in San Francisco need?
This is Courtney. I'll answer that. Actually, that's a lot of what we've been trying to think about through all the moves and changes we've been going through. Because, you know, it's true, giving artists an exhibition really, you know, it's not financially viable for them to live off of that. And
most often they get nothing for it, just
right.
We should note that.
Yeah,
not even a stipend.
It's a good point that you bring up. Southern Exposure has a very strong philosophy about paying artists a really fair honoraria. And we continue every year to increase that amount. We really feel strongly that you cannot put out the expectation that artists are going to work for free or lose money. So
Yerba Buena has that policy,
yeah,
also.
It's, which is, you know, a lot of organizations around here feel, you know, it's a very supportive community. But a lot of what Southern Exposure has been trying to do is sort of the non-exhibition types of programs that we run, which in the last 5 years, we've actually started quite a few of them. But 4 years ago, we started a program called, it's like a survival workshop series, and we offer several a year, and it's just really basic types of skills, and they're usually free. But most recently, we started a grant program. We really decided that, you know, how can we be better supporting what's going on, because we lack the capacity to present enough of it. And so we gave out about $45,000 in grant awards last year, which, you know, for us is a lot. It's still, you know, the program, hopefully, I really hope the program will grow. But, you know, we have the money committed for this year, and hopefully the program, you know, we could potentially give out a little bit more. But just the fact that we're able to invest in activities that we feel are important or artists are working without any money to kind of create a much broader base of activity than organizations who have infrastructures like Southern Exposures can afford to do. You know, I think we counted up the amount of artists and events and activities and exhibitions and publications coming out of the grant program is, you know, literally hundreds of things out of that money. So I guess I feel like there's definitely kind of a swinging back of the pendulum in the funding world towards giving more artists direct funding right now. It's a real trend that you can see. Southern Exposure is definitely, I suppose, part of that trend.
So your big number one need, you think, for artists is funding?
I think just having, you know, visual arts organizations in general don't have enough sources of funding. Mm-hmm. So artists aren't going to have enough funding because it's sort of a systemic problem. But I think giving more direct funding to artists as opposed to just funneling it all to organizations is definitely one way to do that.
And just to clarify, when you say we, can you talk about who your we is at Southern Exposure? I think that's important too.
Yeah, definitely. I'm talking about the staff, since we have a pretty team-oriented approach at Southern Exposure. Amy LeDuc, who's the associate director, and I kind of co-manage our grant program, which is called Alternative Exposure. And Macy Nwazwaz and Tara Foley are the other two staff members, but we have about 7 interns, so we have someone or sometimes 2 people there with us every day of the week. So that's 6 days of the week. We're closed on Sundays. a board of directors of about 12 people.
But who decides where the funding goes?
Oh,
I'm
sorry
if that question was unclear.
Who decides where the funding goes? We actually decided, in all fairness, to have a panel, an outside panel of people come in and review the proposals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the staff really kind of read through and knew the applications really well. But we had a two-day panel where we went through all the proposals, we looked at all the documentation, slides, et cetera, that people sent us, and the panel voted and sort of, you know, deliberated and tried to come up with what they thought were the best 15 projects.
And so, Kate, can you talk about what you see after all these studio visits that you've been on for Bay Area Now, the needs of the different artists here in the community?
I'm just going to answer the question really simply, which is that I think that artists need an audience. I'll follow that up and say the audience needs to put their money where their mouth is. And I agree with Courtney that artists need more support. But, you know, there's so many people out there doing such interesting things, and there's nobody looking at it, or not enough organization. And I know we have a lot of alternative sites in the Bay Area. We have a lot of museums. There could be more.
There could be. And how about in terms of what do you guys do in terms of publications? Because I think it's super important that when you're showing artists' work that you provide some sort of context and also some historical footing for that artist to then move forward in terms of like how their work is situated in the rest of the art world, not just the Bay Area. And that's something that the artists can take with them. What do you guys do in terms of providing that kind of information?
Yerba Buena does probably one or maybe even two catalogs a year, but catalogs are getting more and more difficult to fund, and they're very important for sort of historical reasons, but they always lose money. Mm-hmm. And they take a lot of advanced planning to get them done, and certainly to get them finished by the time when the exhibition opens. We're doing one for Bay Area Now. Baron Golanu, who's curating The Way That We Rhyme, that opens next month, is doing a small one for that exhibition. But they're expensive to do.
But there's now PDF, so you can actually, mm-hmm. if you don't have to do a hardbound copy,
right.
that you just simply have it available for people to read.
Yeah, I think that's the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually commission essays on every show that we do by local artists or writers. For instance, we have a show closing today that it's for our solo exhibitions. So we publish it's a small book, like a zine. You know, it's 15 pages. It's pretty small. It's free, and we really try to commission critical writing about each of these artists' works. And believe it or not, for all of them, it's the first substantial essay they've had written about their work. Mm-hmm. And we have it in PDF form on our website, and we give it out for free to anyone who comes in. We do that for every show. Our next show is a show called Vapor. It's about air. And because it's really trying to take an environmentalist standpoint, all of the writing and books that we're publishing are all online. But we actually are publishing a pretty substantial book this year. That is not only documenting sort of the year of projects we did called SOEX Offsite, which 15 offsite projects that we did over the course of a year, but that also tries to put a local context to working that way and a historical context to working that way. I can't say we have every dime committed, but we're sort of taking a leap of faith, and we have enough money to hire a production manager and get the book up to the point where it needs to get printed, and by then, of course, I will come up with the money to print it.
Do you both enjoy writing about artists' work?
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Is that safe to say?
You know, I used to be a freelance writer, and I'm so mired in the culture of grant writing and press release writing and case statement writing that I think my love of writing about art is sort of maybe been drained out of me a little bit. I'm just being honest. So I kind of take a more administrative approach. You know, I'm sort of technical writer at this point.
You know, it's one of the reasons I left the Museum of Craft and Folk Art, because all of my energy was being taken up with writing grants and press releases and letters and donor stuff. I was like, there was no art in the job, so it's honestly one of the reasons I left that job. As much I loved it, it was parts of it I really loved, but it just became too much, no fun. Mm-hmm.
Meg Schiffler and I were talking the other day about the role of directors and curators of institutions, and one of those key points is that a lot of the director roles are involved with finances, as opposed to things that we typically imagine more of curatorial roles being of maybe writing, contextualizing, working directly with the artists. In an ideal world, what would both of you guys think would be what are the things that interest you most about the position that you're in, and the things that moving forward you would not be happy if they were taken out? For example, yours was writing, Kate.
Writing and meeting artists also, mm-hmm. and talking about what art means in the world today. Courtney, you look like you have an answer to that question. Why don't you go and I'll think.
Well, I have the best job in the world. I love my job. It's a challenge every single day, and every year that goes by, it's a completely different job because there's a different set of challenges. And I have the opportunity to really, like Kate said, maybe it's an idealistic standpoint, but to really try to make a difference in the Bay Area, in the arts community, especially right now with an organization that has so much potential and is sort of going through a lot of change. And so just being able to really think about what that should look like and being able to realize it is very exciting. I'm also incredibly involved in some more national level dialogues about the state of the visual arts field, what that looks like, what's wrong with it.
Is that with the Andy Warhol Foundation? Is that
That's one of them, but I'm also, there's some local dialogues that have been happening, but yeah, it's not actually with the foundation, it's with other arts organizations. So just really trying to, for the last 2 years, I've been working on a couple of projects about that, and just really trying to create more of an infrastructure for more advocacy on a national level, which I think really ultimately will make a difference in the country, if there could be a much larger voice for the types of I think we're really bad at being clear about what we do. I think our audiences are often confused. I think there aren't people at tables with big funders telling them about why what we do is so important. And I really want to be a part of that. And I think while San Francisco has so much going on, I don't think everybody is so good at communicating with each other, collaborating with each other, despite the fact that I think people have good intentions. We're all struggling to keep what we're doing going, but I would really love to see more of that happening.
Well, that there was the big meeting that happened about a year ago where directors of various organizations met, and I'm pretty sure it was through the Andy Warhol Foundation, and you were the lead in getting organization directors together.
It wasn't through the foundation, actually.
What was it through?
It was organized by a group called NAMAC, which is a local service organization, National Alliance of Media, Arts, and Culture. Mm-hmm. They are an umbrella organization for independent media arts organizations. And so what they were trying to do is they were doing a feasibility study to see if they could indeed expand their services to become an umbrella and service organization for visual arts groups nationally. And so what they did was they convened 5 meetings around the US of visual arts leaders in 5 different cities to kind of talk about what the pressing issues are, and took that research and kind of thought about, do our services translate, and is media arts and visual arts, are they one and the same at this point? And so, I definitely think it's a big project to undertake. They're funded by Warhol, but Warhol is not involved in it at all. It's really NAMAC that's doing that project.
Well, most importantly about that whole gathering was just that all the good majority of all the directors of organizations in the Bay Area were under one roof and actually could brainstorm and problem solve about simple things like whether or not one institution may have resources that others could borrow, and that in fact, if you just picked up the phone and gave a call, that we could share materials, things that are very simple.
I think there are several groups that are doing that around the city as we speak. I mean, there was a meeting at Yerba Buena on Wednesday with a group called Art Talks. I'm not sure if that's the right title for it, but it was, as Courtney was saying, all the local arts people getting together. And I think a good thing was that it was a combination of the local, smaller organizations and some of the bigger organizations. I think that there is definitely a way that some of those more resourced, larger organizations can work with the smaller organizations to, you know, accomplish more.
I think it's nice that with Bay Area now, this next one, that Yerba Buena is actually working with artist-run organizations.
That's important.
Mm-hmm, it is, because I think a lot of artist projects don't necessarily fit within a large institutional space, mm-hmm. that especially with social practice projects and whatnot, that you have to find a space or a venue that's appropriate for the artists and their practice, which you guys do such a good job, Courtney, of working directly with artists who work outside of the space. And I think we might be up on time, but I do want to say that one thing that's really important and something I'm hearing from both of you is that you do value your positions and you feel like you're maybe making a difference and that you also love what you do. And I think that very few people are able to say that. So I think it's
true. It's a gift and an honor.
It's really nice.
Well, thank you all so much. My name is Zephyr. You're listening to Frank Prattle. You're listening at KPOO 89.5 here in San Francisco. You might also be listening to WPS1, PS1 Contemporary Arts Center, a MoMA affiliate at www.wps1.org. In addition, you might be listening to our gracious host at San Francisco Arts Commission Gallery at www.sfacgallery.org, and of course at frankprattle.com as well. Excellent talk today, ladies. Good job. We've had Kate Eilertson, the interim visual arts director here at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. Joyce Grimm, mediating the co-curator and director of Triple Bass Gallery here in the Mission in San Francisco, and the executive director of Southern Exposure, Courtney Fink. Excellent job, ladies.
Thank you.
Thanks.